The Beat Podcast is brought to you by Nutritia and is designed for healthcare professionals only. In this mini-series, we have partnered with Feel Good, human health and performance experts who transform science into practical, real-life solutions. You will hear from experts in psychology, nutrition, mental health, sleep, movement, and more. This podcast is all about you, whether that be on your lunch break, on your commute, or simply when you need to get moving. Take a moment for yourself and learn on the move.
Sound sleep, rather than being passive, is arguably the most critical component in promoting whole body health. Still, in this information age, despite being aware of what we should be doing to support our health and sleep, many of us might not easily translate the knowledge into action, so we may not reap the benefits. In this podcast, we want to take the solutions for better sleep from theory to practice. We will explore the most common reasons for which people struggle with sleep and actions that worked for them. We will help you better understand your sleep behavior so that you can put in place strategies that work for you. In today's podcast, you will hear from Yua Akhedo, naturopath, nutritional therapist, herbalist, and lecturer. Yua has practices on London's Harley Street and has helped hundreds of individuals with sleep-related challenges such as insomnia and many more. So welcome, Yua, to today's podcast. How are you today?
I'm really very good. Thank you very much, Andrea. Thank you for inviting me.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to have you here and learn more from your insights. So to start, can you tell us more about what are some of those common sleep challenges that you're noticing amongst your clients?
Well, I would say that definitely they fall into two main groups. So really, clients have issues actually being able to fall asleep on time, even if they're making a choice to go to bed a bit earlier. And for some, they realize that if they go to bed earlier, that they still won't actually fall asleep and it might disrupt their sleep further. So they have issues with sleep onset. And then there are those clients who they actually can go to bed, fall asleep really, really fine, but they have issues for various different reasons around waking up. So their issues are a cluster around sleep duration. So perhaps they wake up far too early, either wake up in the middle of the night or they wake up far too early in the morning, and that's quite disruptive for them.
So if we go a little bit more in depth in both of these issues, can you tell us first what causes those difficulties with falling asleep, and how do we know that that's a problem for us that we should consider?
Well, how do we know that there's a problem with falling asleep?
Yes, how do we know that that's something that affects us and that we should take steps to basically do something about it?
Yeah, so really it's when we look at the data and the research and we have the guidance around what optimal sleep looks like. And of course, we use that term quite loosely because we're all individuals and we vary. But generally, we want to see our sleep duration last between 7 to 9 hours. And good onset time would be around about that 10:30, 11 time. So we know that in terms of quality of sleep, that if we're sleeping in the evening, earlier in the evening, it's much better quality sleep than if we're sleeping later in the evening versus into the very early hours of the morning. And so if an individual knows that they are, you know, waking up, feeling tired, having to wake up with the alarm, you know, feeling tired throughout the day, those would be obviously the classic symptoms of insufficient sleep. And I think with the first part of what you asked me around what are some of the things that get in the way with people that have issues with sleep onset, and generally for one reason or another, the nervous system is just overstimulated. And maybe that would be because, you know, there's a lot of device use in the evenings. Maybe it could be in terms of actually just having a way to manage the stress of the day. So having, you know, real resolution to stress throughout the day, for whatever reason, that might have been compromised. So, you know, typical things that help to resolve stress would be exercise or physical activity, if we're not able to engage in physical activity throughout the day, then that might lead to extra tension, extra stimulation built up in the evening.
Okay, and then what can we do if we only have time to do those exercises, for example, in the evening, if we're very busy throughout the day, and what can we do to help our sleep if our lifestyle maybe doesn't necessarily allow that at the moment?
Yeah, I think that's a really great question, because ultimately we are designed for movement, and so many different parts of our well-being and our physiology really improve by engaging in some type of physical activity. And I think that it's really the focus on movement as opposed to exercise. So sometimes we can really limit ourselves by thinking that we have to go to the gym. Maybe we don't like going to the gym, or we have to do something really vigorous like going for a run to actually exercise. But if in terms of our schedule, the time frame can only be in the evening, then actually those really vigorous exercise forms or being somewhere really stimulating like the gym perhaps isn't the best thing to do, because that stimulation will impact sleep. So if the only time that you can engage in movement would be in the evening, then actually finding some type of movement practice at home, or going for a walk, getting outside would be really very ideal. And, you know, just walking to the pace where you can still hold a conversation, but you can feel that your breathing is being, you know, challenged a little bit, is actually considered to be, in many cases, for many people, a very optimal form of exercise. So I'd say going for a walk or coming home and doing some stretches just to help ease the tension out of the muscles. Oftentimes when we've gone through stress throughout the day, we can have a cluster of muscular tension in our neck and in our shoulders. And if not stretches, but a little bit of self-massage, all of that can help to ease the tension and really support our body winding down for good sleep, for better sleep.
And what would be the worst then type of exercise that we could do in the evening that would definitely impact our sleep in a negative way?
Well, you know, when I think about gym classes, so if we're going to a gym, generally they're very, very brightly lit. Generally there's lots of loud music. You know, if there's like something like a spin class, it was like really fast pace, you know, lots of loud noise, lots of music, then it's very, very stimulating. So it's not to say that we don't do that in the evening at all, but we'd really want to have a good few hours gap from doing something as stimulating as that before we're actually winding down, allowing the body to wind down for sleep. So closer it gets to the time that we want to sleep, so really within that, well, actually let me go back a little bit. I think when we factor in a type of exercise that's as stimulating as that, we also have to factor in that quite likely we'll want and need to eat afterwards. So the ideal time frame between eating and sleeping would be 3 hours before bedtime, because
3 hours,
yeah eating also can impact sleep, as same as exercise impacts sleep. So if we're doing something like that, we'd really need to factor in like, what time can I do it so that I can get home and eat food before 3 hours, you know, finish my dinner by 3 hours before I want to go to sleep. And if it's creeping closer to the time where you're actually going to be encroaching on that gap, then actually looking at less vigorous activity would be much more supportive and much more beneficial overall, I would say.
I see. Okay, so basically if you're going to go to sleep at 10, maybe it's better to eat around 7 or 8. But now moving forward a little bit, if you're considering that you're a night owl, so you simply, even though you finish your dinner quite early and exercise early, you still have trouble going to bed and you feel more energized in the evening, but then you struggle waking up. Is there any other tips or support that would you recommend to help support that sleep rhythm?
Yeah, so definitely there's a biological basis in terms of, you know, for some of us, we are very early morning larks and we tend to wake up early, and some of us tend to be, you know, have that sort of slight latency in terms of when our natural time for sleep onset would be. But I think, again, because sleep, you know, I think it's useful to think of it rather than just what's happening in the evening, but it is part of the wider sleep-wake system. So if we're looking at the framework of the whole day, then it depends on what our schedules are. So perhaps if you have a tendency to be a night owl, but you have more flexibility in terms of your work hours, perhaps you can start work slightly later. Perhaps you also, if you're a night owl, notice that your optimal time, you know, that kind of peak performance time is, you know, later on in the afternoon. Maybe if you have that flexibility, then nothing necessarily needs to change. But if because of family dynamics or family commitments, and if you have a very strict 9 to 6 work hours, then it would be really about modifying your behavior so that you're still able to be within that optimal amount of time for sleep. So just really simple things like actually being really clear about what your bedtime is and having that in your mind rather than necessarily relying on your energy to naturally calm down. So being very proactive and very intentional in terms of winding down in the evening. And also perhaps just looking at, you know, some of those activities. So for some individuals, so I've got clients who are very creative and they tend to have a lot of their productive creative hours later in the evening. And so one of the things that we could play with is actually if they can create a designated time frame for that, that could still assist them in winding down for sleep afterwards.
Very interesting, thank you. And then I also heard of this term revenge bedtime procrastination. So for example, procrastinating going to bed because you are doing those resting and relaxing things like I don't know, maybe watching a show. And especially, I'm assuming, if you have a long working day and then in the evening you go cook, you have kids, you put them to bed, and that later in the evening after 9, 10 is the only time that you have and you feel like you need that time for yourself. How can you balance having a good night's sleep but also overcoming this maybe need to unwind or the revenge bedtime procrastination?
Yes, yeah, so that's actually, I'm working with a client exactly on this at the moment. So a very busy professional, a leader in her role. And one of the things that happens is that that's really the time when she, so after dinner would be the time when she's on her phone, and she was showing me that there's so many messages that come through, not even just emails and work emails, but just social messages. So one of the things that prevents her from sleeping is that she'll be looking through social media and catching up on WhatsApp messages. And I think a really simple thing that we explored is that actually just bringing in little breaks throughout the day to help her have these moments of just decompression and moments of feeling like that she's still connecting with her friends and her social life throughout the day. So not regular intervals throughout the day, but certainly around lunchtime, making sure that that's actually... Well, at the moment, the pattern was actually that lunch would be at her desk. So we've made a little agreement in terms of actually having a fraction of that time away from the desk, outside, and engaging in some of that social activity. So by the time when it comes to the evening, it doesn't feel like it's been pent up. There's been no social engagement up until the evening. And then that's one of the ways in which we're looking to modify that. And so that's what I would suggest, is to look at other periods throughout the day where that could be modified.
So it comes back to those quite common like health practices to make sure that we spend the time even during the day to look after ourselves and prioritize ourselves and not just do everything, try to do everything in the evening.
Absolutely, because I think, you know, if we really think about sleep really not just about what's happening, well, obviously sleep is what's happening in the evening, but it is part of, you know, the sleep wake cycle. So what we're doing in the daytime impacts what's happening and how we can sleep and the quality of our sleep in the evening. And similarly, the quality of our sleep impacts how we function in the daytime. So I think it's perhaps more useful when we make adjustments over the whole of our day and we can see better effects in the evening and our quality of sleep.
Yeah, everything is really interlinked.
Yeah.
And then can we go a little bit and look at that second part of common sleep challenges that you mentioned? So when people wake up during the night once or multiple times per night, what may that be caused by?
Well, a very common thing is hydration. So I've seen over the years many, many, many clients like forgetting to drink during the daytime, getting to a certain point in the afternoon and realizing, oh my gosh, like I have barely drank all day, and then drinking a lot. And so that might be one thing. So that's quite a simple thing again to adjust. And it's really just having a focus on hydrating earlier in the day, well, particularly first thing in the morning when we're naturally a little bit more dehydrated. But other than that, there could be more organic things that actually more sort of issues with the functions of the body systems that might be impacting that. And I think a really classic area to look at would be blood sugar regulation. And of course, the liver is really heavily responsible for modifying and managing our blood sugar response during time, well, during eating times, during the fed state, and also during the state when we're not eating. So depending on the composition of food, depending on the kind of stress response that we're having, whether we've got good circadian regulation and our cortisol levels in a good rhythm, those would be some of the things that I would typically consider for my, and I typically see with clients who are waking up, so who have poor sleep duration. So first thing would be hydration, needing to change that a little bit, blood sugar regulation. So maybe they generally, again, throughout the day have poor blood sugar control. So maybe they're hungry for lunchtime, having blood sugar spikes and dips, and then not really able, the body isn't really able to maintain blood sugar levels stable over the evening, and then there might be a bit of a dip in blood sugar, and that naturally causes a rise in cortisol, the hormone that's actually responsible for raising blood sugar, and that can rouse us out of sleep into wakefulness.
So how can we tell which one applies to us and what can we do?
Well, I think that if that's the case, it does require a little bit more. So some, you know, if you've got the skill in terms of you have pretty good nutrition knowledge and good biomedical knowledge, then maybe you can work that out. But if you don't have, then I think it's quite useful to work alongside with a practitioner. But if other signs that you could look at managing earlier in the daytime would be, you know, just checking what's the composition of your breakfast, what's the composition of your lunch and your dinner. Are you needing to snack throughout the day? If you're needing to snack, are those sugary snacks? And then you can start to modify and work on those a little bit in terms of maybe ensuring that, you know, simple thing, that you just have protein with each and every meal. I think the evening meal is really important as well, because sometimes for some individuals, if they are really mindful about their weight, perhaps they might look at having a very low carbohydrate diet and having an evening meal that's very low in carbohydrates. And that also can impact the sleep duration. So we don't want to have a very high carbohydrate meal, but certainly we don't want to have something that's too low. So those might be just really simple things that you start to play with, start to notice about yourself, and then start to play with and start to modify. And I think when it gets to the point where you've done as much as you're capable and able to do by yourself, then I would recommend working with a practitioner who could assist further, because there are actually quite a lot of, in addition to modification of diet, there's quite a lot of different herbs that we can use to assist with these. And there's a number of different therapeutic strategies that we can use.
So as someone who already has quite a lot of knowledge in nutrition, it's probably just remembering to have a look at this aspect of your lifestyle and see how it may impact sleep. And yeah, not just think about the sleep, but what's happening throughout the night, but using all that knowledge that you already have to think about what's the small change you can do to make an impact during how your body reacts in the night.
Absolutely. And I think just really managing stress and blood sugar responses throughout the day, really, that's what we see. That would be the main thing that we'd want to do to support good sleep duration. So exactly as you said, yeah.
Yeah, so I know there are so many questions I would like to ask about sleep, and everyone's sleep looks a little bit different, and I'm sure everyone has their own challenges to overcome. So to touch on more subjects in a very quick time and get more good tips from you, what about we go to a series of quick fire questions? So I ask a question and then you have up to between 30 seconds to 1 minute to answer. Nothing more than that.
Okay.
So first of all, okay, this is a big question, but try to answer it quickly. How can the menstrual cycle impact sleep?
Oh, well, the menstrual cycle impacts sleep because throughout the cycle, we're having various changes in hormone levels. And I would say actually the biggest time when we notice that would be around the perimenopausal and menopausal phase. So, you know, sleep issues, around about 50% of women in the perimenopausal phase experience sleep disturbance in some way. And it can be associated with some of the vasomotor symptoms such as hot flushes. But yeah, that's the shifts in hormones are responsible for that. The changes with the estrogen levels, the depletion of estrogen levels, can really quite dramatically impact the quality of sleep, because we have estrogen receptors all all over the body, including a lot represented in the nervous system.
And what's your top tip for when that's happening?
Ooh, well, there's quite a few things, but I would say, like, I do like using herbs and nutrients. So I think, you know, in terms of, for many of the sleep conditions, actually, like a nutrient like magnesium and also an amino acid like glycine. So I often use them in combination, magnesium glycinate, really quite useful as a therapeutic. Herbs such as hops, actually, Humulus lupulus is a herb that's quite specific for regulating this, well, it's a phytoestrogenic herb, and it also helps to regulate quite a few of the different symptoms around this sort of perimenopausal phase. So those would be the therapeutics I'd use, but all the things we've been talking about still apply. So stress management, huge. Blood glucose regulation, huge. Physical activity, all of those things that we've already spoken about would be the baseline, and then I'd maybe look at some key therapeutics on top.
Okay, then another question. Can we sleep too much?
So the optimal range for adults is between 7 to 9 hours. So within that, so for some people, they might just sink at 8 hours. So if you're sleeping 8.5 hours, that's too much. But if it's still within that range, that's fine. If you are dramatically overshooting that 9 hours, then I think it's an opportunity to further explore what's going on, really. So, you know, sleep changes have been associated with affective conditions, with affective disorders. So changes in mood, also enhanced sleep duration has been associated with things like, you know, thyroid issues, underactive hypothyroid conditions. So I just think that if you're sleeping dramatically different outside of that range, then it's definitely warrants some further investigation.
So this fits into my next question. When is the best and wisest time to speak and look for professional help? And maybe what other professional help is there?
Yeah, great. So I would say, So when would be the time? I would say if you have, like, sleep conditions are very common, but I always think that, you know, it's always worthwhile, because with conditions like that, lots of different things could be factoring in. As I mentioned just previously, that there could be endocrine disruption going on there. There could be underlying medical conditions that we don't know. So I think that anything that's lasting for several months, and if it's going into months, and if it's disrupting the quality of your waking life, then I think it's important to, first and foremost, would be great to just check in with you, with your GP, just to ensure that there's nothing more insidious going on. And then in terms of the therapeutics you'd go on from there, there's actually quite a lot, because as I mentioned before, if there's a lot of muscular tension, then actually looking at some kind of, you know, a physical release, like whether that's massage or acupuncture, actually sometimes I recommend to clients. If there is more sort of, you know, maybe for some individuals, hypnosis, if there's a particular pattern around insomnia that's gone on, there's a lot of different therapeutics that could be useful. Within the health, within the NHS, CBT, cognitive behavioural therapy is often recommended as well. So there's a lot that's out there, but I think, you know, starting off with the GP, if it's an ongoing issue, just having a check and making sure that nothing else is going on is really wise. And then there's a plethora, you know, I've mentioned herbs, I've mentioned, you know, so seeing a naturopath, nutritional therapist, seeing a herbalist, there's a lot of different therapeutics that we have at our disposal, and it's really just to match what's going on for that particular person.
Yeah, so taking it a little bit like an experiment, first of all, ruling that there isn't any underlying health conditions, and then really understanding what are those causes that are causing the difficulty to sleep, and addressing those one by one. And then, as a final last question, maybe we should have started with this, but what's that checklist for good sleep that you should definitely make sure that you take before you go seek that additional professional support?
Yeah, so the things that are always going to impact sleep first, you know, we've got light is a big, big, big thing. And again, just sticking with this theme of when we're thinking about sleep, it's not just what we're doing in the evening. It's part of this, you know, we look at what's going on in the day. So making sure that we have good light exposure literally sets up our biology for wakefulness, but also good quality sleep. And similarly, ensuring that we have minimal light exposure in the evening. So whether that means that we use, like, you know, particularly in places that are often bright, you know, if we are chilling in our downstairs in our living room and then we come up to use the bathroom to brush our teeth, oftentimes we have really bright lights in the bathroom. So really simple strategies like having a lamp that we'd use in the hallways or in the bathroom for the evening so that we can still be in a low light environment if we want to support sleep. So light exposure throughout the day, particularly at the two ends of the day, really important. Exercise we mentioned, food we mentioned, so making sure that we have good quality protein, etc., etc. So those are the key things. And I think also from a dietary perspective, of course, is being aware of the stimulants that we are consuming throughout the day. So, caffeine in the form of coffee, dark chocolate, black tea, even green tea if we're having quite a lot of it. And also the usual stuff. Of course, we know that some of the sedatives also impact our sleep. So alcohol, for example, interrupts the second phase of our sleep. So those would be the most typical things to look at. And then other things like, I think I'm going for more than 1 minute on this one, but other things like just, the environmental things like temperature would be, again, really quite important. So, particularly as it's cold, central heating, if we're using synthetic bedding, bed clothes, all of those could help to disrupt our sleep.
Thank you very much. It's kind of the checklist: diet, exercise, temperature, lighting, and then of course unwinding throughout the day and doing things for yourself as well throughout the day so you don't try to pack everything in the evening. Well, thank you very much, Yuwa, for all the great tips today. Is there any final one piece of advice, maybe the favorite tip that worked for you to have a good night's sleep that you'd like to leave our audience with?
Well, I pretty much always have good sleep, but I am a very active person. So I think probably my one tip would be try and tick as many boxes off with one go. So it's a very rare day that I wouldn't have some level of movement in the daylight, if not first thing in the morning, then when we have that beautiful afternoon light. So it's like physical activity, light exposure, all in one go. So yeah, doing as many things as you can in one go. So it's an easy win for you.
You made me very inspired now to go on a run now while it's still light outside. So thank you very much, Yuwa, again for your time today. And my very last question is for you who are listening to the podcast today. What did you take from today's talk? What will you do differently to improve your sleep? Please do share this with your peers, with your colleagues, family, friends, and take action, because that's the only way to which a change can actually happen. So thank you all for listening, and have a wonderful day ahead and a restful sleep.
Thank you and good night.
To keep up to date with future episodes of the Beat podcast from Nutritia, make sure you subscribe on whichever platform you listen to your podcasts on. For more updates on the show, as well as lots of other educational content from Nutritia, sign up to our newsletter at www.nutritia.co.uk.